Hey folks, want to talk a little bit about our sponsor for the coaching staff. Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust, all American used cars and trucks. Had to bring my car in just last week, and Juan Carlos and everybody there took great care of me. They've got some great deals for you folks here, and you're going to want to listen carefully to this. If you're in the Omaha area and you need an oil change, you need to go to Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust, 4839 North 90th Street here in Omaha. If you go there on Wednesday, it's only $15 for the labor on your oil change. You need to mention a pen and a napkin, but it's only $15 on Wednesdays for the labor for your oil changes. If you need a new set of tires, go to Ruiz Auto. And it is, if you get a set of four tires, they'll take $75 off if you mention a pen and a napkin. And finally, all American used cars and trucks, 144th and I-80 there. If you say a pen and a napkin 2025, if you mention a pen and a napkin 2025, it is $300 off of any used car or truck out at all American used cars and trucks. So if you are in the need of an oil change, if you are in need of a new set of tires, if you are in the need of a nice new to you automobile, you need to go check out Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust. Again, 4839 North 90th Street here in Omaha, or All American Used Cars and Trucks, 144th and I-80 here in Omaha. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Plum, and I am your host of A Pen and a Napkin Podcast, the weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. Welcome back to the coaching staff. I am here with Ja Morant's injury fill-in, Mr. Tony D. Viss on the other line. He just signed a 10-day contract, which right now for the Grizzlies, it's more like a 10-hour contract because that's about when the season's going to get over here. So we digress here. Tony D. Viss, how are things on the eastern half of the Hawkeye State?
It's a little chilly today. I think we've got more than our fair share of rain this week. But Marty, I will put this plug in. We have not missed a day of tennis. So I'm pretty proud of that fact. Whether it's been practice or matches, we have our tennis opportunities in. How about things there in the big Omaha, Nebraska?
Kind of the same here. Cool and blustery. We got hit with a storm. I can't remember if it was last night or two nights ago. I don't know if you saw it or not, like, we have this area of town kind of in the Midtown area, and cars were being swept away in the with the water. I mean, it was pretty ugly there for a few hours, but we got through it. Got a week, got a decent weekend coming up here, and then, we'll head into it. So, episode 128 here, the coaching staff, the importance of glue players. But before we get to that, of course, we're down to our second to last one of these, Tony. The number's 28, and it's appropriate that it's NFL draft weekend. We do have some footballers. One European footballer, Cristiano Ronaldo. Yeah, not bad. Adrian Peterson, who ironically had a little legal issue. Yeah, the last 24 hours. By the way, we're recording this on Friday night rather than Sunday night, so we're going to be a couple of days behind everything by the time everybody hears this. Tony and I just have a busy weekend. Both of us have a busy weekend. When he's busy, I'm not busy, and vice versa. So that's why we're doing this on Friday night. So forgive us for being a couple of days behind here. But Adrian Peterson, another pretty good running back. Marshall Faulk, another pretty good running back.
Curtis Goshen, running back, say Colorado now.
Is he really? I did not know that. So Curtis Martin, an underrated great.
Gordon, yeah.
Yes, another underrated great running back. Warwick Dunn, another terrific. And then a defensive. Yeah, defensive back, Darren Woodson of the Dallas Cowboys. So pretty good run of 28s. Not much for basketball players with the number 28. But I will say, Tony, there is a current all-star from the Western Conference that wears uniform number 28. Do you know who that is?
All-star in the West that wears 28. I am drawing a blank, like I oftentimes do.
Let's see here. His team is in the playoffs. They are tied 1-1.
Okay. Let's take a look. So I know that the Lakers and the T-Wolves are 1-1.
Yeah.
Is it that series?
It is not.
It is not.
It is not.
Okay.
No, it is not.
Okay. Well, it's not the aforementioned Memphis Grizzlies because they're down 3-0.
Yeah. It is not the Clippers series.
Denver is down 2-1 to the Clips. So that leaves us with the Golden State Houston. Fred VanVleet.
That is incorrect.
It's outstanding.
Same team as Fred VanVleet, though.
Is it Sengun? Is how you see Sengun?
Alfred Sengun. Yes, that is correct. You got it, my friend. With a little help, but we
took
got
some
there.
Digging. Yeah, it's a lot of help. Yeah, we got
there. So, and a lot of people, you know, obviously Sengun was an all-star this year. But a lot of people may see him as he would be best fit to be the second best player or the third best player if you're going to have a great team, even though the Rockets have had a great season. And like I said, they're in the playoffs here, number two seed. We are here to talk about glue players and their importance to any team that you're going to build. And Tony, both of us have built rosters for a long, long time, and we have analyzed it, and you know, you've got to have everybody within those certain roles, and there's value to everything that goes on here, and I'm guessing that of the really good teams that you've coached, there was always one or two really, really outstanding glue players.
Yeah, I think in all honesty, you know, we've talked before, be a star in your role, whatever that role is. And I cannot, I guess, emphasize enough the importance of glue players. And, you know, when you sit back and you think about that for a second, you know, what are some of those characteristics of a glue player? And I think it's just one of those things where they're willing to do whatever role you ask them, no matter what, and they're willing to do it to the best of their ability. And I think that just whatever role that it needs to win. And I think those are the players that are so very, very important and oftentimes, unfortunately, underappreciated.
Yeah. I think that it's important that, you know, kind of talking about what you were saying there, Tony, for most of our players that we coach at the high school level, they don't really understand the concept of glue players, because what have they been told for most, if not all, of their basketball career? You got to be a scorer. If you're going to be noticed, you got to put the ball in the basket. You got to, you know, that's where it's all at, so to speak. And I think that, go ahead, buddy.
Well, I was just going to say, because what do when you go to youth games, what do parents yelling from the crowd? Shoot it, shoot it.
Oh, yeah.
And so I think that's what everybody, and then after the game's over, usually a little bit older than elementary, but the first thing they want to see, how many points did I have?
Yes, exactly. You know, and, you know, grandma will buy you a dinner or buy you some ice cream if you score 15 points, you know, or whatever it may be. There's never, you always, not to get on a soapbox here, but I'm going to, Tony, you'll see moms, dads, grandpas, grandmas keeping track of minutes and points, but you never see them keeping track of assists and screens, you know, or help rotations or different things like that. And I think that's what you have to explain that to your kids. I think one of my lead points here, Tony, you've got to, as a coach, you've got to explain to your players what a glue player is. And, you know, I think a key teaching point that you can have with your team is, how, if I'm not a great scorer, how can I get on the floor? And here's all the things other than scoring, other than shooting and scoring. And yes, shooting and scoring is extremely important, if not the most important thing. It's the most important skill in the game, in my opinion. But there's a heck of a lot more to it than just shooting and scoring. So how can you get on the floor if you're not going to be a great scorer? And that's where that selling of the role of being a glue player really comes into play for you as a coach to establish that within your program.
Yeah, I think it's one of the things as a coach, you know, we've talked about this before, but sitting down with your players and highlighting their role and how important that is, you have to be clear on it. And the one thing that's important, I think, at times, I know this, you know, is maybe a little bit talking out of both sides of my mouth here, but there has to be some versatility in that too, because, you know, there's going to be nights where Susie, Johnny, whoever, shooting the ball really well, and they may have to set screens and rebound and get them open and be there on those rotations defensively and so on and so forth. But there's going to be nights that they're not going to score it, and that might be nights that they've got to step in and fill that missing void. And so just that versatility is something that's very important as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's, you know, really, really critical. Like you said, be a star in your role. What we used to say, accept, embrace, and excel at your role. It's kind of another way of saying that, isn't it, Tony?
Yes, most definitely. You know, it just being able to do whichever it happens to be. And, you know, most times, Johnny, Susie, whatever, may be putting up 20, 25 games or 25 points a night, but there might be that night where they're at 12 and you need to step in. And then that next one, you know, you may have to make sure that you block out every time. You may have to be the captain of the defense where you're communicating and doing different things. And then you're making that pass that gets them that shot or sets that screen that gets them open, but willing to do whatever it takes, just knowing and embracing and excelling in that role.
Youth sports today has become a billion-dollar industry nationwide, and grassroots basketball has been at the epicenter of this explosion. These days, players, parents, and handlers chase the almighty scholarship, NIL deals, and branding creation. However, there is still one place where basketball coaches and players come to develop their games without the fanfare and adulation of recruiting gurus, next-level evaluations, and social media highlight reels. It's not a basketball camp, it's a basketball school. Snow Valley Basketball School started as the brainchild of Herb Livesey, who, as a young adult, was inspired by the great Bob Cousy to start his own basketball camp. Starting in 1961 at Snow Valley Ski Resort, east of Los Angeles, before moving to Westmont College in Santa Barbara, Livesey's school was a place for the game's greatest coaches to teach the game throughout the 1970s and 80s. Two Iowans, Don Showalter and Jerry Slykus, adopted Livesey's curriculum, bringing the school to Wartburg College in Waverly, Iowa in 1994. This summer will be a celebration of its 30th anniversary of Snow Valley in the Hawkeye State. Here, over 1,400 campers will start each day before dawn and end after the sun goes down. Snow Valley Basketball School is America's longest continuously running basketball camp. It's where players come to learn and coaches come to teach. For those that come there every summer, it is the home to The Last of the Cowboys. The Last of the Cowboys, the story of Snow Valley Basketball School, will be available on Amazon on July 1st, 2025. Paperback copies will be available for $17.99, while Kindle copies will be available for pre-order for $9.99. Get to know the story of America's longest continuous basketball camp. What else you got, buddy?
You know, some things that I take a look at as far as the glue stuff goes, you know, some of what we're talking about here, that versatility thing, but also goes basketball IQ. Mm. You know, and with basketball IQ, just really understanding the game, being a student of the game, you know, one of the things I think that oftentimes, because we don't measure it, you know, like in hockey, you can get two players can get an assist on a goal. Yep. In basketball, we don't have that. And so they may make that pass that leads to the ball being swung to find that open shooter along the baseline. You know, they may be the one defensively that helps the helper, you know, just some of those upper level, higher level things. And I think that's so very, very important to have that high IQ, because you want to be hard to play against. And I think we've mentioned this a number of times as well, but easy to play with. And you make the game easier for your teammates, because that's the one thing I think a glue kid does. Is a glue kid makes the other four players on the court with them better. And, you know, because of that, their impact is so much more than just they themselves excelling. They're having those other four teammates bring them, you know, bringing them along with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that is the ultimate compliment that you can give a player. Do you make other players around you better? And, you know, again, not dating us too much, Tony, but we grew up with the Larry Birds, the Magic Johnsons, you know, Isaiah Thomas, you know, those type of players who were more concerned about their teammates first and getting them involved. And then when they needed to step up and make plays individually, they would do that. Do you think, Tony, it is harder to sell that concept of making others better around you in the last 5 or 10 years because of the quote unquote TikTok 10-second highlight of watching LaMelo do this or Harden do this or LeBron doing this or Caitlin Clark or, you know, pick your player that's making the great individual play and hitting the shot and hitting the whatever it may be, instead of, you know, no, this is really how the game is played here, and this is what you really need to do. This is what greatness really looks like, is setting a great screen to open up somebody else so they can get open, or skills like that.
Yeah, I completely agree with what you're saying there about TikTok and highlights and stuff like that. I mean, one of the things that drives me nuts is when a kid makes a nice move and the defender falls to the ground, everybody's like, oh, you know, and then they'll blow the layup or they'll miss the shot. It's like they get so wrapped up in the highlight part of it that we forget the finishing the play. And, you know, you might have a highlight where you did one thing well in a 32-minute game and the other 31 minutes and 50 seconds or whatever were less than stellar. But mm-hmm. Hey, I had that one highlight where I made that dude fall to the ground or whatever the case may be. But the case in point that I would give you, Marty, is when you go back and take a look at the Nuggets when they won it a few years ago, their glue guys were Caldwell Pope and Bruce Brown. And since they lost those two glue guys, you know, their roster, those guys became too expensive with the salary cap and stuff like that. And I understand that. But since they've lost those glue guys, not that they floundered, they're just not at that level where you're like, hey, that's a championship contender. They might win a series. And I don't think Denver's going to get out of the first round. I think the Clippers are going to get them. But my point being is when you lose those glue players, it's kind of like a ship losing its rudder, something that you don't see and that you don't appreciate. But man, you're all over the place and you're not going where you need to go.
Well, it's like the old Cinderella song, Tony. You don't know what you got till it's gone, you know?
Great.
Mm-hmm. Oh, great. Yeah, great song. I would sing the refrain, but I haven't properly warmed up my voice. And I, you know, this environment I'm in is not, you know, it's not acoustically friendly to my tenor. And so I'm going to pass on that. So, but... Yeah, you know, I really think that, you know, that's just a simple way of putting that in that way. So, I think one thing that we do underestimate with glue guys is, you know, they have their role, they do their thing, they make others around them better, but they do have, especially the great glue guys, the great, what we identify as the great glue players, they have at least one elite skill, you know, that is just above everything. Maybe they're not as good in a lot of other areas or they're average, but they've got this one elite skill. So, like, I made a list, Tony, Dennis Rodman and rebounding, Draymond defense, Draymond Green and his defense, Kyle Korver as a shooter, Tony Allen as a perimeter defender, even stuff like a guy like Anthony Tolliver, who was in the NBA for 15 years for I don't know how many different teams Anthony ended up suiting up for. But he was a great glue guy to have on the bench. And if he played, great. If he didn't, he was going to be okay with it. You know, I'm not sure he wasn't okay with it, but he wasn't going to pitch a fit behind the scenes or anything like that. And that's a skill. That's a skill. You and I both know, Tony, you can only play at the most 8 or 9 kids, significant minutes. You've got to have some kids that are going to be okay with not playing very much. Maybe the ultimate glue guy in the history of the game is Robert Horry. Who was just, again, a good defender, but you wouldn't call him a great defender. He was a good shooter, but he wasn't a great shooter. He was a good athlete, but you wouldn't say he was a great, but he was just really good in a lot of things, and that made him a really important glue guy. And again, he was just all about winning. He could have played for a lot of different franchises and scored more points and played more minutes, but he was worried about the team first and doing whatever was necessary in order for that squad to win. And so I don't want people to not think that glue players don't have skill, because they do. A lot of times, like I said here, they have an elite skill, and then they're okay, they're average to a little bit above average and everything else, but they realize that and they play to that strength.
You know, I was thinking of Robert Horry before you got to him, and the one thing I would give you with Robert Horry is I think he did excel at one thing really, really well, and that was hitting clutch shots. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I go back and I think of the shots that he made, whether it was for the Rockets or the Lakers or whoever the case may be. But I think that's something else that's oftentimes underrated in a glue guy, is they are stable under pressure. It's one of those deals where when the money's on the table, they're not going to wilt, whether that's knocking down the shot, whether that's pulling in the clutch rebound, whether that's, you know, being there in the proper spot defensively, whatever it may be, they are stable. You know that you can count on them. They're not going to be all over the place. And I think that's one of the key aspects of a glue guy as well, is the fact that they don't get wowed by the moment.
Mm-hmm. I love that, Tony. Yeah, stable under pressure. They may not win games for you, but they're not going to lose games for you. And those players are really important to have.
And I think more games are lost than more games are won.
Yeah.
And when they're not going to lose the game for you, if you have a team out there that is going to execute under pressure, whatever that may be, out of bounds plays, defensively, offensively, whatever, if they're going to be able to execute under pressure, you're going to put yourself in a great position to win a game. Because, you know, as I mentioned, I believe that more games are lost than are won. And if you can keep your poise and composure at that time, you have a shot.
Yep, absolutely. I've got two more bullet points. Tony, what do you got, buddy?
Yeah, the next one I would go with would be the chemistry thing. Not only are they a leader on the court, but they're also a leader off the court. Because we both have been around teams for a while, you know, you're going to have those ups and downs. And when you have a solid veteran, you know, voice in the locker room that can keep the main thing, that can keep them focused on the end goal, if you will, I think that's really been important. And a glue guy, you know, oftentimes will check their ego. And so it's one of those deals that they can smooth out other people's ego because they don't have an ego themselves, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And so they can keep things kind of, you know, the chemistry going, because that's one of the big things. You know, a lot of teams implode because too many egos won basketball.
Yeah.
And that can be so crucial there. You have to be able to keep them focused on the collective goal that the team has, because too oftentimes individual agendas can disrupt that end goal.
Yeah. You know, that was one of my last two bullet points, Tony, is there's only one ball. And I love that point that you make there. You know, one of the great glue kids that I ever coached, and then I'll, you know, go to my grave with this, was a gal named Kylie Posley. And, you know, this was a long time ago. And, you know, KP transferred from another school, after her sophomore year, and she just wanted to win. You know, she averaged like, I want to say 12, 13 rebounds a game as a sophomore, but her team wasn't very good and she wanted to win. And so she knew she was going to play less. She was still going to play a lot, but she was going to play less. She wasn't going to score as much, so forth and so on. And she just, that's all she cared about was winning. And just was the ultimate glue player. Now, don't get me wrong, Tony, there'd still be nights, especially like when she was a senior, when she would get like 16 and 10 for us. But there'd be other nights where she would get 4 points and 6 rebounds. But you know what? She had 4 or 5 great assists in our high-low game, and we could just put her on the other team's best post player defensively. And again, this is back when people actually had post players on the block, and she would shut them down, and she just didn't care. She just didn't care. And it made it so easy to coach the rest of the team because she had that attitude. And she was a great leader. She was a leader by example. She pushed people. She made them uncomfortable, but in a good way, because she pushed people, you know? And so, yeah, that's what a glue kid, that's the very, in my mind, that's the very definition of a great glue player, and, you know, always be grateful for everything that she did for us.
Yeah. You know, just one of those things where you don't have to worry about her because of the fact that there's no ego, there's no agenda, there's no whatever, just wants to win. And because of that, it's a situation where you can put your effort, your focus, if you will, on the squeaky wheel that needs the grease, and just trust that she's going to potentially, you know, take care of not only herself, but also her teammates. And I think that, like you said, is the very definition of a glue player.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, with that being said, Tony, my last bullet point that I have for this week is you need to make sure as a coach that you celebrate, and I use that word purposefully, celebrate glue players and their contributions to your program. You know, let's say you're fortunate enough to have a really good team and you're getting some media coverage. You know, yeah, it's easy to talk to the kid that got 20 points, but also make sure they talk to your glue player, or players, you know. Talk to Frank, but also talk to Bill as well. And then the next game, yeah, I know I get it. Frank's scoring a lot of points for us, but you need to talk to Ted as well, because he did a great job setting screens tonight. Give him some love as well. Social media. Your post-game locker rooms, point out the contributions of those post players or those glue players, excuse me. You know, very rarely would I say after a game, hey, great job by Tony, you know, scoring 20 points tonight. Great. Plenty of people know that Tony got 20. How did Tony get 20? Well, hey, you know, Chad did a great job of setting him up with 3 or 4 terrific passes, and Bixler did a great job of screening really well for him, and all of those different things there. And I think those are ways, you know, you have to go out of your way to celebrate those glue players' contributions in any avenue that you can, because they truly, truly need to be recognized.
Yes. And if you don't be surprised when others don't want to do that role, because it's not the sexy role. It is the grind. It's the grime. It's the tough role. And if you're not going to show appreciation, you know, whether it's verbally in the locker room amongst everybody, or whether it's with the media, whatever, you know, that's the newspaper, television, whatever, don't be surprised when people aren't signing up for that role if you don't highlight it.
Mm-hmm. You got anything else, my friend?
Yeah, my last one here is, you know, you kind of touched on this earlier with the girl, the KP that you were talking about, but they're defensive specialists who do the dirty work. They're going to dive on the floor for a loose ball, first to the floor. They're going to take charges. They're going to contest shots without fouling. And then the other thing that's really, really hard too is they're going to deal with screens. Whatever way you do that, that could be a communication where you switch it. That could be fighting through a screen to run a shooter off the line, whatever the case may be. But they are the captain. They set the tone for that defense. And we know how very, very important defense happens to be.
Well, and I think you bring up a great point there, Tony. And I think it's something that what the great coaches are able to do is on good teams, you'll have your glue players that will make those plays like you were talking about in that list there. On great teams, everybody makes those plays. And so if Tony's the leading scorer and in practice, Billy goes in to drive and Tony kind of does the, you know, ole defense and doesn't step in and take a charge or try to slip and fouls and gets a 3-point play. Hey, you've got to take that charge. If we're going to be great, Tony, you've got to take that charge. You've got to be tough there. You've got to do the stuff that we need you to do. And I think that's an important responsibility of every coaching staff to make sure that their players do those things as well.
Yeah, it becomes contagious. Like if you make a big deal out of taking a charge, if you make a big deal out of communication, if you make a big deal out of helping the helper and you highlight that and they get attention and they get praise for it, guess what? It becomes contagious. And like you said, the next thing you know, it's not one player, it's multiple players doing it. And you have multiple players doing it. That's winning plays.
Folks, we had a great day on April the 12th at the 5th annual A Pen and a Napkin Coaches Clinic. And if you couldn't be there, that stinks. But what's fortunate for you is we taped everything that we did. So if you are interested in ordering any of our clinic videos or all of our clinic videos from our great presenters on April the 12th, it's there for you. All you have to do is DM me on Twitter at @apenandanapkin. Email me apenandanapkin@gmail.com. We've got Andy King talking about 5-on-5 transition and controlled scrimmages. Jody Steyer from Iowa State University on player development. We've got Lucas Dollinghouse on coaching through an administrator's eyes. Wade Coulter talking about pressure defense and extending your pressure defense. Raz Vanderloo with a basketball smorgasbord of stuff from Sioux City East High School USA basketball, and Jamie Smith from Solon High School talking about shooting and shooting technique, shooting fundamentals. It's a great lineup, great coaches, great presentations. They're there for you. $10 a piece is all the videos cost. If you want to get all 6 of them, I'll bundle it together for you. $50 for all 6 videos. So coaches, if you weren't there, too bad, but because we're thinking ahead here, we've got the videos available for you. Give me a shout out. Let me know if you want to order any or all of the 5th annual A Pen and a Napkin Spring Clinic Coaches Presentations. Well, Tony, you know whose music is always contagious and has been for well over 4 decades.
Not Cinderella, but rather Europe.
It is your turn for trivia, my friend. What have you got?
Well, Marty, as we were talking earlier about my 10-day contract with the Grizzlies, the Thunder had the largest second half comeback in the history of the NBA playoffs as they were down 26 points in the second half and came back and won. Marty, can you tell me what team had the largest comeback ever in NBA playoff history?
Wow. Los Angeles Lakers. Can you give me a decade?
It happened during the 2010s.
Oh, wow. So that recent. Well, that would make sense with the 3-point shot. I guess you can make up points in a hurry. Golden State Warriors?
I will give you this next hint. It happens against them.
Somebody came back against them and won.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'll even tell you how many points this team was down against them.
Okay.
31.
Wow. So it has to be obvious. It's got to be a Western Conference team because that would be an all-timer if they did that in the finals, I would think. Of course, what would be Cleveland? I'm going to say, hey, let's go to the well once again. Oklahoma City Thunder.
Incorrect. I thought you were going to get it on that first one because you said Los Angeles. I'm like, crap, you knew that one. It wasn't the Lakers, but rather the Clippers back in 2019.
Really? Who did they come back on?
The Warriors.
The Warrior. Oh, yeah, the Warrior. You just said that. Duh. Oh, well, hey, wow. Wow. Hey, that's a good one, buddy. That's a good one.
I've been the most improved trivia question asker.
Well, you know, I would say, you know who would agree with that is our guy Mal Allen, who would say. So Tony and I are going to, talk here about the NBA playoffs. What we're going to kind of do here, and again, it's Friday night right now. Boston and Orlando are in a nip-tuck game here. Boston's down 2 with 18 seconds left to go here, according to my computing device. So really, really close game, and I think, where was it here? Indiana was slightly up on Milwaukee in the third quarter here. So
Milwaukee has come back. They're up 11 with about a minute and a half left in the third.
Oh, okay. Oh, gosh. I didn't get an update here. I got 69-69 according to the ESPN.com. Oh, there it is, 81-73. All right, you are correct, my friend. So we're going to spend 1 minute. Here's the gimmick. Here's the thing that we're doing here. We're going to spend 1 minute, approximately, on each series here. Let's start in the East. Let's start with the two games here tonight. Tony, let's go to the Magic Kingdom. Let's spend 1 minute on Orlando and Boston. The floor is yours first, my friend.
It's surprising how competitive this series has been. From the standpoint, I thought the Celtics have a history of where they kind of play with their food a little bit.
Yeah.
But Orlando almost won game 2. And I get Tatum didn't play. And you got to give Jaylen Brown a lot of credit. Had a great game. But with the Magic's injuries, they are underseeded at 7. But I think the Celtics will get it in 5 or 6.
I would agree with you. I love the analogy of playing with their food because that's kind of what they do. You know, Tatum was out game 2. Holiday is out tonight with a hamstring injury, apparently. Jaylen Brown's got the banged up knee. But yeah, I agree. Orlando is underseeded because of Banchero's injury and Wagner's injury earlier this year. They're better than a 41-41 team. And I truly believe that. It's probably going to go 5. I think it's going to be a gentleman's sweep, but, excuse me. It's going to be interesting to see how, Orlando's going to, I still think they have a really, really bright future, despite whatever may happen in this series. I think they'll get 1 in Orlando, but I think it'll be over in 5. We went a minute 15 there. So, such is life, Tony. So, so we got, Indiana and Milwaukee. I can start on this one here, Tony. I think this is a gentleman's sweep that is also going to happen, but I think it's going to happen with Indiana. I just don't think Milwaukee has the horses. I could see them winning here tonight, but I think the pace of Indiana, Indiana started out, but kind of like the Clippers and the Timberwolves, they had a strong, strong finish. And they ended up winning 50 games. They were solidly in the fourth position. Halliburton is playing really, really well. They're deep. They got a bunch of guys that can shoot the ball. They play with great pace. So I just think this is a really, really bad matchup for Milwaukee.
I would agree. Milwaukee is an older team. One of the things I would look at here is the fact that there was a reason why Kyle Kuzma was available. and I think that Giannis is trying to, is kind of figuring that out. I agree with you. It's going to go 5, maybe 6, depending upon if Giannis just has one of those games. But it's a bad matchup for Milwaukee, young team that plays with a lot of pace. And I see the Pacers taking it in 5 or 6.
Yep. Let's go Cleveland and Miami. What are your thoughts there, my friend? Other than Miami is probably a little bit more exotic port of call than Cleveland.
Yeah, and you go take a look at Miami, another underseeded team. Obviously, they had the Jimmy Busker, try it again, Jimmy Butler blow up in the middle of the year and had to kind of reboot. But they're a dangerous team. Cleveland's pretty good, though. If there's a team in the East that can take Boston to six or seven, it's Cleveland. And I see Cleveland in four or five here. I like Tyler Hero kind of tweaking Darius Garland a little bit about him not playing defense to try to maybe get him to be a little bit selfish and maybe alienate his teammates a little bit.
I really think that Cleveland is overwhelmingly better. I just think it's a, you know, I saw that Ware kid play for Indiana last year, and you know, I think he's doing better things in Miami, but when you have to work hard to get a guy to play hard, that's a big red flag for me. And, you know, now Miami is being dependent on him because, you know, the Butler trade and, you know, that type of stuff. I just think they're overmatched. I think Cleveland is just humming along here. I could actually see this being a four-game sweep, Tony. I really, really could see that happening. So,
The only thing concerning with me on that one is what happened to Jaime Jaquez. I really thought he would have a really good year too, but it seems like a sophomore slump. Maybe the film's out on him. But yeah, I'm just a little bit puzzled in terms of his development.
Yep, agreed. Agreed. Perhaps the most intriguing first round series here, and we may end up going more than a minute on this one here. New York and Detroit. New York won a tough game last night, but Detroit very easily could have left New York with two wins. They came out with the split. Now New York takes home court back here. I find this a very, very intriguing series, Tony. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, you have two teams that are gritty, that don't really like each other a whole lot. They had a little bit of a skirmish last night, and Isaiah Stewart wasn't even involved, which was surprising. But this is one where, Cade Cunningham just continues to evolve in front of our eyes and become a superstar. But New York, when they're not playing Boston or Cleveland or some of the elite teams, they can beat those teams. But I think this one is going six or seven, and it would not surprise me if the Detroit Pistons pull off one of the upsets in the first round.
You know, obviously this game four is going to be big because if New York finds a way to win it, it's going to be hard for Detroit to win three in a row. But if they can make it 2-2 and now it's a best of three series, you know, anything can happen in that scenario. Like you said, I really think we're finally starting to see Cade Cunningham hit his stride. You know, he is showing why he was the number one overall pick 4 or 5 years ago with the way that he's playing now. And he's got, you know, it's still not a great supporting cast, especially without Jaden Ivey. But Tobias Harris, Dennis Schroeder, you know, they've got holes in their game for that level. But they've been solid veteran acquisitions. Malik Beasley has shot the cover off the ball. And like you said, Tony, this Detroit team plays with a chip on their shoulder. They've kind of got that pseudo bad boys attitude of, you know, we're not going to back down from anybody. And, you know, with the way Tibbs does things in New York, if one of those first five guys goes down for with a tweaked ankle for a week, Tony, and they miss a couple of games, that changes the complexion of really everything in this series. I think it was big for Detroit's confidence to get a win in Madison Square Garden, especially with the way that they lost game one. They've shown that they can go in and win. I think that's important for their confidence. They, like I said, they're really going to have to go in and play well tomorrow. Where is I can't remember if it's tomorrow or Sunday that they're playing, but it's Sunday. And I mean, they can't go down 3-1, but if they get it to 2-2, hey, you never know what might happen. So, you want to know a crazy stat, Tony? The game that Detroit won in New York for game two, you know how many years it had been in between just a playoff victory for the once proud Detroit Pistons franchise?
Was it 15 or something like that?
I think it was 2009. I think it's 16. It's either 16 or 17 years that they've gone without a playoff victory. Just a win, not winning a series, a
Yeah, a
win.
playoff win.
Yeah, so it's crazy to think that. So, anything else on the Eastern Conference, Tony?
I'm ready for the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yeah. Can we put it on simulation and get to that point?
I'm all for that.
It's crazy to think that. So, anything else on the Eastern Conference, Tony?
I'm ready for the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yeah. Can we put it on simulation and get to that point?
I'm all for that.
Want to know more about A Pen and a Napkin and all the resources it offers? Go to apenandanapkin.com, a great resource for any coach at any level. In addition to our A Pen and a Napkin University video library options that are available to order, we have hundreds of pages of notes, from one-page handouts to book breakdowns to original coaching notes. We also have coaching links, a full catalog of every A Pen and a Napkin podcast, and ways to contribute to the growth of A Pen and a Napkin. apenandanapkin.com is a coaching resource that will help you become a better coach. Coaches are absolutely loving our Taking Over a New Program booklet. As many of you know, I spent 2 years outside of coaching, and during that time, I hung a note card in my workspace at school that said, "Strip the house down to the studs." I took that time to really rethink and reorganize my thoughts on what it takes to run a transformational program. As I prepared for the possibility of coaching again, I organized these thoughts into this 96-page booklet. How much do I trust this booklet? I used this booklet as I went on interviews to help sell myself and my vision for what my new program would look like. If I'm using it to sell myself, why wouldn't I recommend it to you, my listeners? This booklet will help you look at any part of your program, no matter what stage you're at in your program, and help improve it in some way. It's all yours for only $15, which includes shipping and handling. For more information, email me at apenandanapkin@gmail.com. All right, let's talk about the West, Tony. Let's start with the game here tonight. This is maybe the most fascinating series overall. Minnesota and LA, the T-Wolves went in, dominated game one. The Lakers came back and played much better in game two, but still was a highly competitive game. I think the Lakers only ended up winning like by 7, 8, 9. It was less than double digits. And now we got the pivotal game three in the Target Center here. It's already started. Minnesota's up by 4 very, very early in the game. Tony, is Minnesota kind of one of those proverbial teams? They're hitting their stride at the right time. They're getting hot at the right time.
I'm going with that, Marty. They really grabbed my attention by winning game one like they did. Like, that game wasn't really that competitive, to be honest with you. And game two, credit to JJ as they made some adjustments. But Minnesota took a 20-point lead and knocked that thing down to 9 and made it, you know, some anxious moments there. I know Redick took a timeout, famously got on his team pretty hard. Yeah. But I just think Minnesota's younger and they're in a better role and playing better than what the Lakers are. I think it's going to go 6 or 7, but I'm going to go with the T-Wolves.
Yeah, I'm going to take the T-Wolves in 6 as well. I just feel like, and I know it seems like it's crazy to bet against Luka and LeBron, but I just think Minnesota has the advantage. I think they have more matchup advantage. I think, you know, it's let's say LeBron, or let's say Ant and Luka play to a draw, you know. That's one of your two big deals there. And there's really, if you really drill down on the Lakers roster, there's not a lot there after the big three of, you know, Luka, LeBron, and Austin Reeves. Obviously much better players than you and I are, but for the NBA level, it's pretty barren. And you know, the T-Wolves have DiVincenzo, they've got Naz Reid coming off the bench. They've got, you know, if Gobert can cause some problems playing defensively, you know, I just think Minnesota has the better roster top to bottom. It just took them a while to figure it out. Julius Randle is playing much, much better than he was earlier in the year. So I'm gonna agree with you there, Tony. T-Wolves in 6, and when we see each other hopefully sometime this summer, we'll celebrate with some Arby's. How about that?
I like it. And the guy that I think is the key for the Lakers, it's not Luka and LeBron, it's Austin Reeves.
Yeah.
And if he doesn't play well and put up 20-ish, they're in trouble.
Yeah. Yep. Agreed. That was well over a minute. I think we can make up some time here. Oklahoma City and Memphis. Stick a fork in them, Tony?
Yeah, it's checkmate. And the big part that hurts them is Ja getting hurt. If Ja hadn't got hurt, I think Memphis wins game three at home, and game four would be huge. But with Ja being out for game four, it's over.
Yeah. It's unfortunate. You know, a lot of people have pointed this out. It was 2 or 3 years ago that the Grizzlies were a two seed, and they seem to be where Oklahoma City is at right now. This is where people envision Memphis being, is where Oklahoma City is actually at. And it's just been, you know, between Morant's issues off the floor, Brandon Clark injuries and different things, they've just kind of stagnated. And it'll be interesting to see what they do in the offseason here. But unfortunately for Memphis, it's looking bleak that this could be a 4-0 sweep here. Another series that, you know, thought was going to be really, really competitive, but the Denver Nuggets are really lucky that they're not down 3-0 right now. They're down 2-1, and fortunate to just have the one here. The Clippers extremely dominant in game three here, and it looks like that attrition that we had referred to when we were talking about glue players earlier in the podcast, Tony, that attrition has really hit the breaking point for the Nuggets here. It just doesn't seem like they have enough bullets in the chambers here to stick with the Clippers.
Yeah, and all of a sudden, you know, you're seeing Kawhi morph back into a few years ago Kawhi, and one of the best players in the league. And then if you go with Denver, I mean, Jokic is Jokic, and then Jamal Murray's kind of up and down. And, you know, and then you take a look, Michael Porter Jr., sometimes engaged, most of the time not engaged. And when you're needing Russ to kind of become the Russ of fire 10 years ago, you're in trouble. And so I see the Clippers winning in five or six.
And it's too bad. I mean, again, this team, you know, it's 2 years removed from an NBA champ. And I think a great lesson for all of us is nothing is ever a given. I mean, 2 years ago, we were talking about how this team was going to be one of the, maybe in the next dynasties for the next 5 years. And now there's a higher than average likelihood that they're going to be done in the first round after a second round exit last year. These things happen fast. And it's unfortunate. You know, Jokic is so good, but like you said, the attrition with the role players, Michael Porter Jr.'s inconsistencies, Jamal Murray just had the nagging injuries, it's felt like, the last 2 years. So it's just been a tough go for the Nuggets here. And but I agree with you, Tony. I think the Clippers are going to take this in probably six. So our last one here, Houston and Golden State, 1-1. Of course, the greatest variable here is what is going to happen with Jimmy Butler. I think if Jimmy Butler is able to play the rest of the series, I think it's going to go six or seven. But if he's not out there, it's like Steve Kerr said, we basically have to start all the way over from scratch here. We've got to redo everything if Jimmy's not going to be there. So I hope, for the sake of basketball, I hope Jimmy Butler is able to play in the rest of the series and to be as healthy as he possibly can. But I think that's, you know, you hate to say it, it's dependent on something like that. But in my opinion, that's where we might be at, Tony.
I agree. And the one thing that's also tough is you might have alienated his backup with Jonathan Kuminga, who had 11 points, once Jimmy was hurt and played all right, which kind of makes you at times sit back and scratch your head. And why isn't Kuminga playing before that, maybe with Butler on the floor at the same time? But Steve Kerr obviously has won a couple more championships than I have. It's very much dependent upon Jimmy Butler. If Jimmy Butler plays, I agree with you. I think it goes six or seven. But I just like Houston, bunch of pit bulls. And, you know, you were talking about Houston earlier, and we were talking about Sengun and so on and so forth. But the guys who are the key to that team, I believe, are Green and Thompson. If Green and Thompson play well, I think the Rockets are a serious threat, not just to Golden State, but to get to the Western Conference Finals.
Mm-hmm. I did just check the injury status and of Jimmy Butler, and Steve Kerr did say this, Tony. That's what Kerr said about his game three status there. There's no one in a million talk here as we go through this. So I really hope he plays, because I think this has a chance to be a six or seven gamer as well. I think it's I agree with you. Houston has the advantage in athleticism. They're probably deeper. Like you said, they got those, they got some dogs, man. They got some dogs, and the biggest dog might be Ime, who's just not going to back down from anybody. However, you know, the veteran savvy of Butler and Draymond and Jimmy Butler, or Steve, Steph Curry, it would be great to see them. If they're going to go out, have them go out at full strength and have them go out the right way. That's what I would hope for anyway, Tony. But that's just me. So anything else on the West, buddy?
The West is a little bit more topsy-turvy than what the East is. It'll be fun to kind of watch this whole thing play out. But again, I like the series in the first round of the West, if I can spit it out, much more competitive than on the Eastern side.
Mm-hmm. Tony, let's wrap everything up here this week. Let's talk a little college basketball. The portal is still active, but it's narrowing down here. And probably the team that has taken the most advantage of the transfer portal is the St. John's Red Storm. Rick Pitino has really use the portal to his advantage. Could they be, Tony, the number one team? That's the question I posed to you a couple of days ago. Could St. John's be the number one team in the country after the portal season is winding to a close here?
Yeah, like they've got dudes that came in there that will come off the bench that were double-digit scorers at their previous stops. That, like I said, are going to have to come off the bench. I mean, they've brought in like six or seven really, really good players with a good player or two that are still there. I think the Red Storm will be preseason number one.
You may be right, buddy. We'll have to see here. Purdue has a chance to be really, really good as well. They've got Braden Smith and Trey Kaufman-Wren back. And then they've got their own transfer portal benefits with Oscar Clough from South Dakota State. He averaged about 17 a game for a really good Summit League program. And then right now ESPN has Houston at number two, but I think I might put St. John's at worst number two right now. You know, Pitino working his magic once again. Did you get a chance to watch the Pitino show on Vice Sports, Tony?
I didn't.
It's really, really good. You know, it's kind of the season of the St. John's, and I watched like the last three episodes. I think I've got to go back and watch the first three or four, whatever, which ones I missed here. And I've always, I know that, you know, Coach Pitino kind of became a punching bag at a certain point in his career for his personal issues and the scandal that he had with the dorm and the exotic dancers being brought in there at Louisville. But you can't deny that the guy can really, really coach the game of basketball. He's one of the best ever to do it. And so for me, it's just a fascinating study of watching one of the best coaches that the game has ever seen, especially at the college level, in action, and just kind of going behind the curtain and seeing how things really function there at a high profile program. And obviously they're not showing us everything, but it's just an interesting look at things. So I really recommend you checking that out, buddy.
Yeah, I saw a little bit of a clip on him. Just have never watched a full episode, and just the one where he talks about, you know, just kind of giving up and you know, and you got to be tough. You have to, you know, and that would make you want to run through a brick wall. Rick Pitino, like you said, definitely one of the best coaches to ever do it in the college game.
Yeah. So episode 128 here, Tony. We'll call it an early night. You got to get up early here, and I've taken enough of your time. Plus, you gotta tip off is at 2:30 for the Grizzly game, so I know you got to get in and get stretched and everything. Yeah. Yes. but hey, any final thoughts on glue players, buddy?
I cannot emphasize the importance of them enough. I really can't. If you have players without an ego, players with a high IQ, players that are doing willing, versatile, do whatever it takes to win, you've got something special. Highlight them, appreciate them, and celebrate them.
Yeah, 100%. Great things coming here from a pen and a napkin. We got The Last of the Cowboys. Tony, you saw the cover art. I send that to you here. And
yeah, it was good. It was sharp.
Yeah, yeah. The guy that I had design it, I sent you the pictures that, that I described it with, didn't I? Mm-hmm. Yeah. My drawings look like a six-year-old whose hand was cramping. But the guy who took my scribbles and created the cover design, just knocked it out of the park. I mean, he kind of took what was in my mind and put it there in the cover. So, July 1st, that is coming out. And we've got more stuff coming from a pen and a napkin. Really excited for it, and we're going to let it rip here. So, Tony, good luck in the match tomorrow, my friend.
Thank you.
We get thrown into the deep end of the pool. We've played a pretty tough schedule as is, but these will probably be the two best teams we'll play all year. So it'll be fun. Hopefully our guys compete.
Yeah. Coaching will elevate them to another level that they've never experienced before.
If we're dependent upon that, we're in a lot more trouble than I think I realize.
Well, great stuff. Once again, I know Tony's really busy with his tennis team, and I appreciate his time in the teeth of his season here. So episode 128 in the books. Hope you folks have enjoyed it. We'll be back again next week, and we're going to be talking about something. So coaches, as always, let's be sure to hone our craft one day at a time.